Welcome to side 2 of the January 2009 edition of Computer Talk. As I stated on side 1 of the tape, we've had our friend John staying with us over New Year, and whilst he was here, he recorded one or two articles for me. Must apologise about the fan noise in the background, but over now to John, who is going to speak to you.
Hello, John Gilliver, G6JPG here, Julia's friend, on the subject of speeding up computers by stopping programmers running at Windows startup, which may also then continue to run all the time you've got Windows running. If you search the internet for startup control or control startup or similar phrases, you will find there are many tens of programs around that offer control of Windows startup. Most of them seem to cost about $20, but there are a few free ones around. This evening we've been looking at one called Wind Patrol. I'll briefly mention one other one, which is just called Startup Control Panel. I mention it because it's written by Mike Lynn, www.mlin.net, mikelynn.net, because it's quite simple to use, and like most of his programs, very small and free, of course. The address for that one is www.mlin.net/startupcpl.shtml. That's capital S on the startup and a capital CPL. But it's probably easier to just say, to just follow the startup control panel from his homepage, which is, of course, www.mlin.net. Incidentally, the Mike Lynn program is also friendly and, in fact, fairly similar in appearance initially. The other program we've looked at is Wind Patrol, or Wind Patrol 2008, which is available from www.windpatrol.com. So there's a free version and a paid-for version called Plus. The Plus version costs $29.95, but we're looking at the free version. This program actually controls and monitors various things that can go wrong with a Windows system, particularly caused by viruses and other malware. It seems to be fairly speech friendly. We're using JAWS here. The Wind Patrol window has 12 tabs, though you'd normally only use one or two of them. It remembers which tab you left it in. The normal one that it comes up first time is the startup programs list, which lists all the programs that are set to start when Windows starts. It has a little tick box labelled Display Secret Startup Locations Advanced Mode, which is initially not ticked, and it then gives you a shorter list. If you tick that, it gives you a longer list of programs that are set to run at startup. For each program in the list, it tells you the name of the program, which is just the name of the executable file, the command that actually runs it, the company that wrote it, if that information is available, where it's called from, because things that run at Windows startup can be called from various different places, about four different places in the registry, your user startup group, the startup group for all users, and various system files, and also when Wind Patrol first saw the file. Along the bottom of the list of programs, there's a row of five buttons: Info, Add, Remove, Disable, and Close. Well, Close just closes the program. Info gives you a bit more information on whichever program the cursor is currently on in the list. For example, one of the programs that in Julia's system is set to run at the startup is called wltray.exe. If I have that one selected and click the info button, it gives me the full name that the manufacturer has given to the program, which instead of WLTray.exe is BT Voyager 802.11 Network Adapter Wireless Network Tray Applet, which tells me that it's the thing that shows in the system tray what networks are available when the wireless adapter is plugged into the computer, and that it's called from the registry where the actual program is, in this case see Windows System 32, and that it's actually running. The information box also has a kill task button, which could be used to stop that program running if I wanted to. Back to the main window, the remove button would remove that program's entry from the startup menu, so that next time I ran Windows it didn't run at startup. The disable button is a rather more vigorous form of remove, which would not only remove it from startup but prevent it from reappearing. Some programs think they're so important that they have to run at Windows startup and reinsert themselves even if you remove them in the first ones. The obvious example is the player from Real Networks, which you use to play, or some people use to play .ra files, Real Audio. If you remove that from the startup group, but you then actually run the program, for example to play an .ra file, it will reinsert itself into the startup group, unless you've used the disable button in Wind Patrol, which will not only remove it, but make sure it stays removed. The add button is to actually add programs to the startup list. If, for example, you always use the computer for email, you might want your email program to start every time you start Windows, rather than have to start it up manually each time. And if your email program didn't have a automatically start with Windows function, this is a way you could arrange for it to do that. In the information window that comes up when you press the info button, there's also a plus button, which for those who've bought the more expensive version of the program will go and find more information about that program from the database that the company that makes it have built up over the over time on various programs that are commonly found in startup groups, which could potentially be useful, because in quite a lot of cases you can't really tell what a program is from its title. Even the long title isn't always filled in, and therefore you don't know whether it's something that should be there, needn't be there, or shouldn't be there because a virus or something has inserted it. Anyway, that's the startup programs tab of Wind Patrol. The next tab along is delayed start, where you put things you want to start with Windows but not straight away. For example, if you wanted your optical character recognition software to start up every time you ran Windows, but you didn't want it to run until the scanner had initialized, you might set that to start up after a minute or two. Similarly, if you always wanted your email program to start but wanted to arrange for your system to establish a connection first, particularly if you're on dial-up, you might put that in delayed start. The next tab is ActiveX controls. I've never been too sure myself about what these are, but they seem to be mainly add-ons for browsers, in particular Internet Explorer, and are a common source of where viruses get into the system. If you follow the security bulletins, you will often be told that such and such an ActiveX control has had a security vulnerability discovered in it, and usually shortly after they reveal that a patch, a fix, has been released to close that hole. Wind Patrol allows you to selectively disable individual ActiveX controls between the announcement of the security vulnerability and the release of the patch. I'm more or less quoting from the help file there. As I say, I'm not too sure what they're about. It does give you a bit extra information on the company that wrote the files. Hello. The next tab is IE Helpers, which is Internet Explorer Helpers. Two sorts of add-ons to Internet Explorer. Things called Browser Help Objects, or BHO, which are normally invisible, they just work when you you need them, and they can have useful functionality, such as, well, you may or may not consider it useful, but a Winamp toolbar for Internet Explorer, or a Skype add-on for Internet Explorer, Skype being the telephone through the internet system. Another sort of add-on to Internet Explorer is the toolbar, the best known of which is the Google toolbar. Some people love it, some people hate it. It adds an extra toolbar to Internet Explorer. Both sorts of these, the BHO, Browser Help Objects, and the toolbars, can originate from malicious sources as well as benign ones. Anyway, Wind Patrol can remove individual ones of these. I should have said near the beginning that when we say remove in Wind Patrol, either from the startup list or IE Helpers or anywhere else, it doesn't actually remove the program from your hard disk. It's still there. It only stops it being called up. In the case of the startup programs, it stops it being called whenever Windows starts. In case of IE Helpers, it stops them being called, well, at all, but they are still there, and it can turn them back on again if you decide you needed them. So it only removes the call to them. It doesn't actually remove the program or whatever itself. It does monitor one or two other things about Internet Explorer, such as the home page being altered. That's the page that appears when you start up your browser. I think it only works with Internet Explorer, by the way, not other browsers such as Firefox, Netscape, Opera, etc., because they are not as deeply tied into the operating system as IE is, which is the reason a lot of people favour them, of course. The next tab is Scheduled Tasks. You can set in Windows certain programs to operate at certain times, not just when Windows starts, but say at the same time each day, or under quite a variety of other conditions. Wind Patrol can remove individual ones from the list. It can also be set to monitor whether any other program has added anything to the scheduled tasks list, possibly unknown to you. Incidentally, Wind Patrol has a dog bark alarm for when it detects something happening that it thinks you should know about. Now to look at the other row of tabs. The leftmost one is services. It monitors which services are currently installed on the computer. A lot of the services are part of the ordinary running of Windows and should be left alone. And in fact, it has a checkbox labelled "Use non-Microsoft list non-Microsoft services only," which is ticked by default. In other words, by default, it only shows you the ones that aren't Microsoft. This tab is slightly different to the startup programs one in that it doesn't have an enable and disable button along the top. But if you go into the info screen for one entry in the list, that contains a drop-down list for whether the program is disabled, manual, or automatic at startup, so you can change it from within there. The next tab is Active Tasks, in other words, what is currently running on the computer. It's the same list, I assume, as comes up in Task Manager, but this one does have the advantage of the info button at the bottom, which allows you to get further information on any particular task. Because the name of tasks, especially as shown in Task Manager, isn't usually very informative. For example, one that we saw in the startup list was BCMWLTRY, or BookemWultrly.exe, which is not very informative, but this program tells you that that's the BT Voyager Network Adapter Wireless Tray application, or ASWPDSV, ASWPDSV.exe, is actually the Avast Antivirus Updating Service, which is the antivirus software that Julia has on here. This screen also has a kill task button, so you could stop any task running, which you can do from Task Manager, of course. The next tab is Cookies. Wind Patrol, or Scotty the Windows Watchdog, dog as it sometimes calls itself, can be set to automatically remove cookies that contain certain text portions. So if, for example, you're using a website and you fill in your name or credit card number or whatever, if that website should try to store a cookie on your system containing that information, Wind Patrol will automatically remove it straight away. The next tab is File Types, which is really file associations. Which program is associated with which file type? Like the usual Notepad for .txt files and Word for .doc files. But different people have different preferences for which programs they want to open certain files with, particularly audio and picture files. Some programs in particular like to take over control of rather more files than file types than you wish when they're installed. Wind Patrol allows you to guard against that happening, I think. Certainly manage it better than the rather clumsy method provided by Windows File Manager. The next tab is Hidden Files, which is simply a list of all the files on your system that are marked as hidden. Most of those are likely to be perfectly legitimate system files that the design of Windows have decided would be best left hidden, either because they would confuse or because it'd be dangerous for the users to see them in case the user deleted or altered them. But, of course, some malicious software can add further files and mark them hidden. The next tab is just Plus, which is just the place you enter your registration code if you've bought the more expensive version of the program. The final tab is Options, which does allow you to change various options about the whole program, such as whether it plays sounds or not, but also where you can create various log files, either as an HTML, that is web file, or as a spreadsheet, where you can monitor the host's file, which is something that much malware modifies to redirect you to the wrong place when you're using your browser for certain common addresses such as Google or the BBC. You can export the settings for the Wind Patrol program to a file, so you can reinstall them later if you want to try something or want to temporarily uninstall it or whatever, or presumably even take them to another machine. I should also say that various of the tabs, such as Startup Programs, Services, ActiveX, etc., have a monitor button which, when pressed, bring up a box you can type in or slider you can move to determine how often it's supposed to check all the things you've asked it to monitor. The default setting appears to be 2 minutes, at least for the startup programs. 4 minutes for ActiveX, 2 minutes for IE Helpers, 11 minutes for scheduled tasks, and so on, but they're all manually adjustable. Well, I hope that's given some introduction to Wind Patrol.
Well, thanks, John, for that article on Wind Patrol, which I did hitherto use in 2007, but I didn't notice all the other tabs, or maybe I didn't look properly, but it's certainly quite a comprehensive program. John now has another article for us on something completely different.
Printing on A5 paper from Word. The best way to print on A5 paper from Word is to select the A5 tray in your printer setup and use that. However, if your printer doesn't have an A5 tray, then you can load A5 paper sideways, landscape, into the A4 tray, and you can print on it from there, especially if your printer uses a single sheet feeding, though it will probably work if it has a paper tray as well. If you want to print along the long length of the A5 sheet, in other words in landscape mode, then you really need do nothing out of the ordinary, just create the text as you normally would on A4 outline in Word, or anything else for that matter, just remembering of course not to go more than halfway down this page. You might also want to make the margins smaller than you normally do. However, if you want to print portrait on A5, in other words across the short dimension of the paper, as you normally do with A4 paper, one way, assuming you have Word 2003 or later, or that's Office 2003, because I don't know if this option applies in the earlier versions of Office, is to create the document approximately as normal. I'll explain one or two minor points in a moment. And then go to the normal print dialog, File Print or Control P, and under Zoom, which is the fourth tab from entering the print menu, I'll just do Control P. Tab. It says pages per sheet. And that box normally contains one page. If you down arrow one or twice, you get two pages. And then go to OK. It will then print at two pages sideways on a normal sheet. If you only want to print one page, of course, because you're using half-size paper, then still select print two pages per sheet, but just print the one page. Of course, this does print it at 1/√2 times the size, i.e. smaller, so you may want to use larger font sizes. I wouldn't mess with the margins from what you normally use, because the reduction will also reduce the margins. Finally, if you have a four-page document, you can print it on a single sheet so that it can be folded to make an A5 leaflet. You do the print, tab, two pages per sheet, but you also go to the page range edit, which I think is Alt-G, and put in 2,3, and then print that, and then turn your paper over and repeat the process, but print pages 4,1. It's important that they're that way around, not 1,4. And with a bit of practice, you will print on your single sheets of A4 on one side pages 2 and 3 and on the other side pages 1 and 4, such that when folded in half down across the middle, You've got page one on the outside of the fold, page two in the inside of it, page three on the right-hand side of the inside, and page four on the back, like a little book. As I say, I'm not sure which versions of Word have the pages per sheet option. Some printer drivers may have the pages per sheet option built into them as well, but when printing from Word, at least, I think using the one in Word's own print dialog is probably the easiest. If your printer driver does have multiple pages per sheet as an option, of course this means you can print on A5 paper from applications other than Word.
Well, thanks John for that explanation of how to print when you haven't got an A5 option, as it were, in your printer properties. Well, at the beginning of this tape, I did tell you that it was the 20th anniversary of Computer Talk. However, this is not strictly true. Computer Talk was actually started in about 1986, I think, by David Calderwood. Some of you may remember him. And a year or so after that, it was carried on by Michael Nyman for a little while. Then he gave up and we said we would take it over until someone came along who would carry on with the magazine. However, no one has come along, so we've been doing this for about 20 years. And this is actually the 20th anniversary of when we took over Computer Talk. A lot of changes have happened during the last 20 years. We started on the BBC Master and slowly went over to PCs. Some contributors have come and gone. However, to name but a few, we do have and have had Mike Cassidy, Ray Hazan, Jeff Stratton from Wollongong, Australia, Robin Jennings from Northern Ireland, Jeffrey Butterworth, Barry Moxon, Gerald Locke, John Gallagher, Ivor Stiles, Andy Matching, John Gilliver, and I'm sure a lot of you will remember Albert Yeo, who contributed a great deal to the tape and who passed on about 5 years ago. Anyway, we're now going to give you some snippets from the first year of Computer Talk and see how far we get towards the end of this side of Computer Talk for January 2009. So over now to Computer Talk 1989. Hello everybody, this is the January 1989 edition of Computer Talk. For the first time, this is Julia
and Frank Cosgrove
from Newcastle upon Tyne, NE65 AD, doing the January 1989 edition of Computer Talk. We are your editors for the present time, as Michael Nyman has finished his little stint. So I hope you enjoy what we are going to put on this edition for you, and hope that it comes over well at your end. First of all, from us, a very happy new year to you all who receive Computer Talk from the VGU group. And if you do have any contributions and things like that, please send it to us.
Or any questions which we might be able to answer.
And if you have any complaint or any articles to send us, or anything you would like us to try and get put on the tape,
please get in touch with us, either on cassette or in braille, or if you'd like to phone us. Our tune you heard on the beginning of the tape was taken off a cassette produced by Model B Computing some time ago. Quite a nice little tune, so I think we'll have that as a signature tune for the time being. And at the end of the side one of C90, we're going to have another tune which will take us on to side two.
I then went on to speak about the aims and objectives of Computer Talk and gave one or two addresses, including those of Jeff and Sue Clark, who used to have the library, I don't know what happened to that, Harry Kennett and Toucan Communications. I then went on to mention Pyramid Micros of Warrington and Watford Electronics. I wonder if that is still going. I also mentioned HCCS in Gateshead, and I think this is where we got our star printer, which still works on the BBC, although the BBC isn't working at the moment. Yes, we have kept that going. Also, when giving out phone numbers, we didn't have the one after the zero at that time.
Now, Frank has a little advert for you.
If you want discs which are double-sided, they'll format 80 tracks double-sided, contact 25 Bankfield Road, Ditton, Widnes, Lancashire, and you will be quoted how much they will cost. Approximately £40, I think, postage and package for 100. And the person you will ask is Mr. P. Cosgrove. He has managed to acquire all these discs. I have actually got a box of 100. And they've formatted both sides and working perfectly.
These discs were on about the 5 1/4 inch, which we used to use on the BBC. They were floppies, and they were actually floppy.
Let us now go over to our General Secretary, Michael Cassidy.
And welcome to the Secretary's desk for the January 1989 issue of Computer Talk. And a Happy New Year to you all. I trust you all had a very pleasant Christmas and that the new year will bring good things, computing-wise and otherwise. I'm very pleased that the Cosgroves have taken on the editorship of the magazine because, as I said in the last issue, I think there is a need for continuing it because there are a lot of people out there who may well have heard all about all the new programs and new software that's about, but how much in fact do they know about software that's been about for many a long year? And I thought over the next few issues I'd sort of, in my little pieces, would cover a touch a few things like that. And I shall start in fact with WordWise Plus this time, as I've had a few members saying, well, can you tell us a bit more about it? I mean, many people know how to word process simply with it, but there are some neat little parts to WordWise Plus that actually make it a very useful word processor. And I think one of the main things is this programming language that they've written to go with it. And it really does make it very useful. I think, you know, above having looked at word processors on the PC, it still has an advantage over them in terms of this programming language.
Mike then went on to mention the Archimedes and later on talk about WordWise Plus, which was very popular on the BBC.
And here is our friend John again to talk to you about the Mimic.
Hello. Just thought I'd describe it from the conventional computer user's point of view. It's a small box that plugs into either the serial port or, Frank tells me, the parallel port, and you treat it as a printer, but basically instead of printing, it talks. There are about 10 simple control codes you can send to it, which make it go fast.
Hello, this is Michael Nyman, your one-time editor of Computer Talk. Today, having been severely badgered by Julie, I'm going to talk to you about the programming of EEPROMs. EPROM, E-P-R-O-M, Erasable Programmer Read-Only Memory, which really means, as opposed to random access memory, you can program it and then read it, and read it as often as you like, but to change the program, it has to be erased. Now, for the benefit of those of you who don't know,
they don't normally do mail order, but you might well get some of your chips cheaper there. We got some 21-volt ones, which were priced at about £3.25, I think, just the other day. However, on now to the next article.
Hello, Albert Yeo here. The new editors have asked me to do a piece on Vue. Vue, as you know, is a word processor which is already present in the Master series computers when you buy them. So you don't need to go out and buy another word processor. I find it an excellent processor with plenty of good facilities. It has several differences from WordWise Plus, with which I'm not thoroughly familiar, so I can't really give a complete comparison. Vue, for instance, is not menu driven. There's no menu. You have two screens, command screen and edit screen, which is...
And would be talking to you again in April 1989. So from us, it's bye until next time. Bye for now.
And buy an Apollo for £3.95 plus VAT. Contact David for price definite prices. They may change. If you can't afford an Apollo, you can get a Mimic for about £128, I think. Now that may include the PC software, so it's worth checking that for the BBC it may be even cheaper. Again, check with David. He's the man to tell you the exact current prices.
Well, the next item is from Richard Bartholomew. It's a phone call which I made to him. Sorry about the slight distortion on the tape, but it's just how it recorded, and it's explaining all about what will be happening in Edinburgh.
It's going to be a display, or exhibition rather, of aids and services for the blind. Primarily computer-based equipment, likes of speech output devices, braille terminals, some reading devices, likes of the Opticon, Kurzweil reading machine.
I suppose braille-to-print equipment, or
there will be some braille-to-print equipment.
What time will it start?
Right, it starts at... what time is it? 10 o'clock, I think it is.
Yes, 10 o'clock. Okay.
So, over now to Ray Hosan, who is going to introduce this item for you.
Hello to the listeners of Computer Talk. I am the unique array for computer designed specifically for the mind. I shall now hand over to Ray, who will explain my features to you.
Well, this is the real Ray speaking, folks, and Judah's asked me to talk about the Eureka A4, a computer that I've had for about a year now. It's designed, in fact, by a chap called Milan, and then some unpronounceable name. He's a Czechoslovak emigre to Australia, blind himself, and he wanted a computer that had all the facilities built within.
Hello, this is Aidan O'Mara here in Cork on the south coast of Ireland. Home address 42 Haldane, H-A-L-L-D-E-N-E, Haldane Drive, Bishopstown, Cork City. Telephone 021-546-271. And I was asked to show a demonstration of packet radio. I'm a radio amateur, and as also is Julia and Frank. And Julia asked me to give a demonstration of packet using a BBC Micro and in my case here, name of speech synthesizer. First of all, I'd like to explain to those who haven't a clue just what packet radio is. Amateurs are using a form of X25 protocol, which is used for data communications over telephone lines and that. For instance, your fax machine and teleprinters and such like. But in amateur circles, we use a form of this called AX25, A for amateur. Basically, your data is composed or built up into a string, maximum length 255 characters. Now, this packet has a checksum attached to it, and also a few other labels and bits and bobs.
Well, there you are. That was a few snippets from the January and April editions of Computer Talk for 1989. It was a little bit sharp, although our voices were a little bit different too. Interesting to hear how they have changed in 20 years. Anyway, we're coming towards the end of the January 2009 edition of Computer Talk. Hope you enjoyed some of what we put on for you, and we want lots of articles for the April edition to be received by the 31st of March. You can either send the articles to us on tape or on disc, or via Spend Space on the computer, or through email, as long as the article is not too long, depending on the email and so forth. As Mike Cassidy is sending his by email now. SendSpace is a very good one to send articles by, but do put the title subject as Computer Talk. Our name and address is Julia and Frank Cosgrove, number 8 Wandsworth Road, Heaton, H-E-A-T-O-N, Newcastle upon Tyne, November Echo 6, 5 Alpha Delta. Phone number 0191 2656 345. My email address j.cosgrove@line1.net. That is LINEONE.net. Send any articles to us, not Brain Design at St Dunstan's, as they would just be copied over. And of course, we need to thank St Dunstan's for doing the copying for us. Anyway, looking forward to lots of articles for the April 2009 edition of Computer Talk, and we will speak to you again in April. So now, from myself and Frank, it's bye till next time. Bye for now.